From sprains to fractures, get expert care quickly at the University of Kansas Health System. Walk-in orthopedic care is open weekdays, 8 a.m. to 7 p.m., and Saturdays, 8 to 2, at I-435 and Null. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/orthopedics.
Pack your bags, start the car, and get on the road. It's time to go across the country, 2 minutes at a time, for the biggest stories of the day, where they're happening.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Boston, Mass.
Miami, Florida.
It's the 2 minute drill on the program.
Yes, indeed it is. 2 minute drill brought to you by our friends at Twin Peaks. Twin Peaks open for business. They got you covered right now, as a matter of fact. Go to twinpeaksrestaurant.com to put your order in and pick it up on your way home. Made from scratch menu. And, of course, dining room open. There are limitations. There are rules and regulations that need to be followed. So show a little patience. Show a little class. They can't seat everybody as much as they would love to right now. They got to follow the regulations. The wonderful 29-degree draft beer, best, coldest beer around. Great place to watch some sports. We're getting some live sports back. Twin Peaks. Enjoy, of course, the eats, the drinks, and the scenic views. Twin Peaks open now in Olathe as well as in Independence. Time for the 2 minute drill around the country, 2 minutes at a time. Talking to the people, covering the stories where they're happening. We start in the Bay Area. Roxy Bernstein, 95.7 The Game, A's Radio, and ESPN Television. Roxy, how are you, my friend?
Seren, hanging in, managing like everybody else, just trying to stay safe. You know how it is.
Yes, yes, I do. Doing what we can to come together while staying apart, right?
That's exactly.
The catchphrase. All right, I hope you and the family are all good, my friend. Let's talk about the 49ers, the schedule. I don't think we've talked to you since that came out. Oftentimes, the team that loses the Super Bowl has a big regression the next year. Any reason to think that's coming for the 49ers, and is there anything about the schedule that you think could trip them up?
I don't think so. And I, look, we all know that adage, right? And you're worried about a letdown, but I think the 49ers have helped themselves with the acquisition of Trent Williams, and even though Joe Staley retires, you get a Pro Bowl caliber left tackle and maybe one of the most dominant offensive linemen in the game to fill that spot. I think the Niners helped themselves out in the draft. They've saved some money, even though they had to deal Buckner away to the Colts, picked up Javon Kinlaw from South Carolina. Also, even though they saw Emmanuel Sanders go in free agency, they bring in Brandon Ayuk with their second first-round pick. So the Niners have set themselves up, but the one thing that's concerning is the division's a lot better, right? You look at the Cardinals, they're clearly much improved by going out and getting Hopkins. You wonder about the Rams, and the Rams could be the worst team in the division, and they're not bad. Then, of course, the Seahawks. So I think the division will be tough for the 49ers when you're playing home and road against those teams. And it's a little bit of a more difficult, more challenging schedule. I don't think they're going to win as many games as they won last year, but I definitely see them still as one of the elite teams in the NFC.
All right. Tell me, what's up with the A's not being able to pay $1.2 million in rent? Is this just a ploy? Are they picking a fight here? What's going on?
I think from a standpoint of, look, they're making sure their employees are taken care of and getting paid. And the stance is that they don't have necessarily access to the stadium because it couldn't be used for COVID response. So I think it's a posturing move by the A's. And I don't know if it's necessarily the best look either, considering that they need to partner with the city and the county if their plans are going to go forward. And they want to build that new ballpark down on the water at Jack London Square. And part of the deal is that they're going to also acquire the land the Coliseum sits on to develop that for commercial retail and space to help fund the new ballpark. It's just a posturing move, Seren. Look, when you look at the owners in Major League Baseball, John Fisher, who's the A's owner, is among the wealthiest and most elite in terms of revenue, personal revenue, of any of the owners. It's just, I think, a business move from his standpoint more than anything else.
It's a really, really bad look. I will say that. But I don't know. Listen, maybe that's why I don't have billions of dollars, because I don't get it. I'm completely open to that. Golden State Warriors. Do they probably don't even want this season restarted, right? As talks about how to get the NBA going, are they just going to mail in a B team if it does get going?
I'd be shocked if they didn't. And even Steve Kerr said as much a few weeks ago. Serrani was interviewed, and he's treating this like the season's over. And they had kind of exit meetings via Zoom with players. If they do pick up from the regular season and try to get as many games in as possible for a playoff, I wouldn't expect to see Curry or Thompson playing. And maybe limited minutes for Parker, who they picked up. It's going to be, I think, a G League All-Star type team. Honestly, I'd be surprised also if maybe Draymond would get minutes. I just think the Warriors are resigned to the fact they know they have no chance of the playoffs, and why subject themselves to injury and possible setback for next season, which the Warriors are gunning for to make another run at a championship because they feel they have the nucleus to do so. And keep in mind, the Warriors have a top draft pick this year because they're going to finish so poorly. So there's a number of things that can help this team out, and by trying to send the best squad possible, if they do try to complete a regular season, is not in the Warriors' best interest.
Yeah, no, I get it. All right, finally, Pac-12 football. We know the California governor said, listen, he doesn't see any big stadiums being packed full of fans coming this fall. We've heard, a lot of people college football say, oh, no fans, no games. They're now all walking that back. Jim Harbaugh's like, hey, if it's no fans or no games, I vote no fans. I'm curious, where do you think the college football season for the Pac-12 stands right now?
Right now, it's all systems go. And one thing that I've heard from a number of people inside the Pac-12 is the commissioners are all on the same page, whether it's Bob Bowlsby, in the Big 12, or Greg Sankey with the SEC. The commissioners are all on the same page, and they're talking every morning. And so I know people have tried to predict, oh, this is the end of the Pac-12. The Pac-12 is going to be left behind. That's completely false and baseless. And the Pac-12 is in lockstep with the other power conferences, and they plan to move forward. Now, are some other options on the table in terms of maybe just a conference schedule only or local non-conference games where you're not going to have to get on an airplane and just try to make bus trips if you can? I think everything is on the table at this point, but I do believe that the Pac-12 will be on board with the rest of the power conferences when football and sports come back in the fall.
Roxy Bernstein in the Bay Area. Great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. Have yourself a great Memorial Day weekend. Stay safe.
You too, brother. Take care. Alice Days,
Fort Worth night. Ari Temkin, 105.3 The Fan in Dallas, Texas, along with Sirius Big 12 Channel. Ari, how are you, my friend?
Sir, I'm well, man, in a balmy 90-degree Dallas spring day.
Yeah, you enjoy. We're going to get to the upper 80s, I think, sometime during this weekend. That's a little premature as far as I'm concerned, but I digress. Listen, Bob Bowlsby's been making the rounds and had a lot to say. We spoke with him earlier during the pandemic. He was on with Fox. He was on with ESPN. And you on the Big 12 channel there on Sirius had a half hour with him. What was the biggest impression you came away with? What do we need to know about Big 12 athletics and, in particular, college football as we get ready for the fall?
Well, I mean, Seren, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there. Like, he's been a very productive, prevailing voice in the midst of all of this. He spoke, to Congress, and this was obviously independent of the pandemic. He spoke in front of Congress about the name, image, and likeness discussion. But he was very proactive in the discussion they did have with the pandemic with Vice President Mike Pence. So I think he's very much, from a commissioner's standpoint, been a leader. I don't know about you, but I haven't heard a ton from Jim Delaney or Greg Sankey or, any of the other conference commissioners, or as much as I've heard from Bob Bowlsby, which is interesting. He's, I think, from the start, sort of mentioned not the idea of starting late, but what happens if, when flu season comes back around and it potentially resurfaces. And so he really kind of came through some of the contingencies from a league office standpoint that they're trying to work through. Because, it certainly looks like they're going to be on track to start on time. But, a big concern, obviously, once you get back into the, non-90-degree days and you're looking back at cold and flu season, will that be another time where you have another, another outbreak or a pandemic? So, I think that's huge. And then, it's kind of amazing how a couple of weeks ago it looked like even if we had football, there was no chance that we'd have it with fans in the stadium. And, he told us that he does foresee a situation in which there's fans in the stadium. He didn't mention, capacity like we heard from Gene Smith at Ohio State in terms of, 20 to 22,000 in a horseshoe that seats 105. But, I think that's certainly interesting. And then, he sort of mentioned a uniformity when it comes to coming back. And obviously the SEC voted earlier today to come back, mid-June. And I think that we'll see the same thing or similar from the Big 12 not too long thereafter. And Bowlesby's been meeting with the presidents and chancellors of these universities literally every day trying to walk through exactly how this is going to look.
Yeah, no, I've been impressed. He seems to have, great leadership, and I like that he's being honest. And we played back some of his stuff earlier this week that he did on Fox, and he was the first guy to talk about, we may have to shut it down, we might have to live with a virus, things that some people don't want to hear. And we know how Americans have decided that if we don't want to hear it, it just doesn't matter. And so we just turn our ears away from everything. I appreciate that he is talking truth and reality, and that's why I have confidence. If he says, if he's talking the truths and still talking about playing the games, it gives me confidence as to somebody who's acting like, nothing to see here. Leslie Nielsen out in front of the fireworks factory that's blowing up, waving everybody off, is not what we need right now. So I've been impressed by how Bob Bowlesby has handled things. I'm thrilled that Alden Smith, one of our local guys, is going to get another chance in the NFL, a deal for about, I think it can go upwards of $4 million, right? But I think it's only about $900,000 guaranteed. That's there. Why Alden Smith? Why take the risk? There's no doubt he's a risky player, and I hope this works out for him. But why take the risk on Alden Smith for the Cowboys?
Yeah, Raytown, right?
Yep.
So he had fourth DWI last June in the Kansas City area, and apparently he's been sober since July. So that's the good news, right? I mean, nearly a year-long sobriety at this point. Every report indicates that, he's done the necessary things to put his life back in order and give himself a chance to get back on the field. I think, Roger Goodell allowing him, reinstating him into the NFL is a huge, huge piece, considering not just the DWI arrests, but literally four or five others for other things over the course of his football career. I mean, he hasn't played since 2015, but he was at one point in class of his own with Reggie White and some of the greats ever played a game with 42 sacks in his first 3 years, but that's a long time ago. In watching him play in college and his first couple years in the NFL, he was just an absolute monster athletically. So that's you have Cowboys fans here that sort of have these unrealistic hopes of that guy, and I don't care how much football you played or haven't played, you're just not going to be the same athletically 7 years, 6 years later. So it's a really cool story, obviously, and part of me just gets really excited about the potential of it because of how it's rare this type of situation is. And, for me, if this guy can dress and play in 16 football games this year, I think that'd be an incredible, incredible accomplishment, incredible story. And I think the production will be there if he does. So I don't know what that looks like. Is it four sacks? Is it five sacks? They're going to have a really good defensive line. Their biggest issue right now is at right defensive end, where you've got a kid from Kansas who's a late-round draft pick named Dorrance Armstrong competing along with Alden Smith, and then Randy Gregory, who's still waiting to get reinstated. Gregory just has a check to pass in terms of not passing drug tests. So that spot is open for production if Alden Smith can fulfill it.
Yeah, and first of all, I hope the guy sets a new sack record, has 23 sacks, and his life is together, and he's happy, and it's the greatest 30 for 30, one of the great 30 for 30s we've ever seen. I absolutely hope that's the case. By the way, while they lose to the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. But that being said, we've quoted many times, Herm Edwards says you can have two my guys. And a my guy is a guy that you've got to assign somebody to pay attention to, right? Tyreek Hill would be a my guy on this Chiefs team. Can you have Alden Smith and Randy Gregory, who is also suspended indefinitely for substances? Is that really a good idea to be bringing both of them back and in the same position room, no less?
I mean, it's a very interesting story. I mean, question. Because, and maybe I'm just creating my own distinction, but Gregory is only guilty of failing drug tests. Now, as you mentioned, it's a substance abuse issue. But I mean, you know, what? I'm not going to be naive to think that there aren't a significant amount of players in the NFL that aren't doing the same thing Randy Gregory is. They just understand how to pass drug tests. And maybe I'm just, you know, I'm just diminishing this, but I think Aldon Smith, he's got a larger problem to try to overcome than a Randy Gregory. Okay. But again, maybe I'm just creating a distinction that's not there.
No, I'm with you. I just don't know that Aldon Smith and Randy Gregory sitting in the same room becoming buds is necessarily the right combo. But you know what? I might be 100% wrong. Aldon Smith might be the perfect guy to bring Gregory along, or vice versa. I don't know them personally, so I'm not qualified to say that. But I just think it is interesting that the Cowboys are trying to do this. Ari Temkin in Dallas. Great stuff as always, buddy. We appreciate it. Have yourself a great weekend and stay safe.
You too as well, man. Be well.
What more can I say? Welcome to LA.
Pete Fox, KLOS in Los Angeles, California is next. Pete, how are you, sir?
All is well, my friend.
New AD at UCLA. What does this mean for Chip Kelly as the head football coach at UCLA?
Well, there hasn't been a whole lot of discussion. As we talked about before, it seems like they're still willing because, you know, things started to turn around a little bit as the season went on and they started to understand his offensive mumbo-jumbo. So I feel like they want to give him a little bit more time to kind of see it through. They've never been really, you know, a little contrary to USC, they've never been one to kind of pull the ripcord too early on a coach, especially one like Chip Kelly. So it feels like, and this is a young guy, 39 years old. So they're gonna give Chip Kelly a little bit more rope, I think, to see where it goes, because they, you know, they were starting to play a little bit better towards the end of the season.
Anthony Lynn, what's the point he's trying to make by mentioning Cam Newton? If you're happy with your quarterbacks, you just say we're happy with our quarterbacks. But he seemed to entertain Cam Newton. Where's the interest level there?
Yeah, it feels like it's a bit of a smokescreen, right? As we've talked about in the past, he's been all in on Tyrod Taylor, but he is talking about Cam Newton quite a bit, and I think that has to do with a couple of different things. First of all, his health. You know, through the pandemic, we don't really know 100% what Cam Newton's health is right now. And second of all, we don't really know what Cam Newton's price tag is. So I think if Anthony Lynn can get Cam Newton at a discount and he's healthy or close to 100%, I think he'd be willing to go in on it, because when you look at the two head-to-head, when they're at their best, it's hard to argue that Cam Newton is not a better quarterback than Tyrod Taylor. Tyrod Taylor is a safe quarterback. He's not going to make a ton of mistakes, but he's also not going to win you a ton of games. So Cam Newton seems like a better answer, and it fits Anthony Lynn's style of coaching as well. So I don't think we've heard the last of that story just yet.
All right, two really good NBA teams. The Western Conference Finals may indeed be just the NBA Finals when it's all said and done between the Clippers and Lakers. If we get it, what's the word in L.A. on whether or not we're going to get the NBA up and running?
Oh, gosh, everyone's hoping and trying to be positive about it. You know, I think that through all of this, there's little steps in the right direction, little steps of positivity. And, you know, over the last week or so, bunch of the Lakers are getting together with LeBron at a private gym. I was surprised to learn, Soren, that it's not in LeBron's house. I thought all these guys had gyms in their houses, especially when you're the caliber and with the wealth of LeBron James. But he does not have a gym in his house, but he has secured one where he's been inviting other guys over there like Kuzma and Anthony Davis, and they've been working out. So the Lakers have also talked around the 1st of June about opening up their facility to the team to play basketball. So I think we're getting closer. It really feels like that, because there's talk from the leagues about how they're going to go about it. You know, we're hearing these stories. This is how it's going to look. This is what we're going to do. And then you kind of put all that together. I don't think anybody's in any big hurry to get back, but they are going to get back and have some sort of, you know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, finishing the season in one form or another. And even guys like Steve Kerr and his team, who are completely out of it, are saying, yeah, we're kind of in postseason mode, but we feel like there's still more to be played with this season. So the Lakers are probably a little bit more vocal about it, because I don't know exactly why. Maybe they're just covered more heavily in L.A. than the Clippers, because we haven't heard a lot from anything going on from the Clippers Nation. It's all been about the Lakers and so forth. But it does feel like we're getting closer little by little to getting back to some basketball, probably without fans in the beginning. But at some point, I do believe there will be a culmination to this season.
Pete Fox in L.A. Great stuff as always, buddy. We appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
You too, man. Thanks.
In Detroit, you can catch me on 7 Mile.
30 WDFN and ESPN 96.1 in Detroit, Michigan is next. Jim, how are you, buddy?
Hey, I'm doing great. We're finally about to get some nice weather up here. It's supposed to be 80 and sunny for the long three-day weekend.
Yeah, good for you. We've got rain right now. I think we've got some warmer weather coming as well, mid-80s coming down here. So maybe everybody can get out and enjoy the lake up there in Michigan. Are they enjoying the fact that Jim Harbaugh seems to be on board with, yeah, we'll play ball with no fans? I don't think it's anybody's first choice, but we've heard a lot of college people saying, no, no, you can't do it without fans. Jim Harbaugh jumped all over it. Hey, if it's not playing or playing without fans, we're playing without fans. I assume that was a popular statement by him.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where we love college football around here, and if the choice is have it or not have it, I think not having fans in the stands is a sacrifice that a lot of people up here are willing to make. If push comes to shove, we still want to be able to watch Big Ten football.
Is this the year for Michigan to get over the hump?
Oh, come on. It's one of those, it's always next year for Michigan. That's what it is, right? It's always next year for Jim Harbaugh. It's year six. And they're breaking in a brand-new quarterback, 4 of 5 offensive linemen. They lost a couple of their top targets at the wide receiver position. Hard to think that this is the year they're going to break through and beat Ohio State, who may be, if not for Clemson, the very best team in college football. No, I don't think there's an expectation that Harbaugh is going to get it done this year. And really, that's been kind of a crazy process to watch from when he came in with hellfire and brimstone in his opening press conference, and there was a belief that it wasn't about if he would do it, but when he would knock off Ohio State and when Michigan would get back to the college football playoff. And he said earlier this week, it eats them up and it burns that they still haven't got it done.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting. I know things went well with Day last year, but let me see him do it. I think Urban Meyer being out of there may open up the door for Michigan when it's all said and done. You mentioned breaking in a new quarterback. Shea Patterson is here in Kansas City trying to make the club. What do the Chiefs have in Shea Patterson?
How do I do this politely? Because, like, it's your guy now, and I don't want to, like, dog him. But Michigan fans were not surprised he went undrafted. And it was an issue of he's not very big. His arm strength leaves a lot to be desired, leaves a lot of those long balls fluttering. Pocket awareness was atrocious. He had 4 offensive linemen go into the NFL, but you wouldn't know it if you watched the way that he conducted business in a muddy pocket. So I don't have anything to really sell you on. Not that you guys need to worry about going with a different direction at quarterback anytime soon.
Yeah, we're not looking for the guy, right? That's for sure. But always interested in what they do have on the roster, because Patrick Mahomes is – you know, he's a bright kid, but when it comes to his body, he's tougher than he is smart. He's willing to put himself out there. So I think we are going to be dealing with injuries throughout his career because of how tough the kid is. So we will see backups if they get out there on the field. Matt Patricia's name has come up. I know it's a make or break year for him, but I've seen his name mentioned a couple of times as a guy who replaced a 9-7 African-American head coach in Jim Caldwell, who has now won 9 games in 2 years. Now, I know the heat's on him. He needs to win this year or he's going to get fired. But is there any backlash there in Detroit about the fact that they did fire an African-American coach and they've replaced him with a guy who won the same amount of games over 2 years that Caldwell won in his last year?
Yeah, I mean, I think you get calls. We get calls from people who said, hey, maybe they shouldn't have moved on from Jim Caldwell. And certainly you can bring up now with the Rooney Rule in the discussion, you know, what was really going on there. I don't think Martha Ford or the Ford family looked at this in a racial way, but it's one of those things that people will point to and say, you had someone who was getting you in the postseason, Caldwell, when you look at win percentage, one of the winningest, I think he is the winningest coach in Lions history, which says a lot about the history of the Detroit Football Lions over here. But yeah, he was a guy, and I didn't have an issue with the sentiment at the time, that maybe had capped out, though, had cleaned up the locker room, brought a level of professionalism, but ultimately couldn't get you to the next level. And we would use the comparison in Detroit. You had to go get your Larry Brown, right? Because at the time, Rick Carlisle had built the Pistons up into a decent team, but Larry Brown took him over the hump to win a championship. The thought was if you could get the right coach to build off of what Jim Caldwell did, well, maybe, just maybe, we'd see a playoff win in Detroit. Now, I don't want to get ahead of myself. Maybe even 2. That has not happened. Matt Patricia, as you put it, 9 wins in 2 years, and Stafford's injury you can factor it in either way. This team was headed for 6-7 wins when healthy. They've underachieved. They've taken steps backwards. And there's no doubt about it that there is a little bit of buyer's remorse, because at least with Caldwell, you were in every game, you go to the postseason, and there was a foundation that we're sorely lacking now.
Yeah, we'll see how it plays out this time. All right, how did The Last Dance play in Detroit? The way the Detroit Pistons were portrayed, the way Isaiah Thomas specifically was portrayed, what was the reaction in Detroit to that?
Well, I mean, a lot of Jordan told the story Jordan wanted to tell and maybe didn't tell the story of what really happened. They did make sure to highlight the Pistons and the role they played in Jordan's development. But people here in Detroit, there's not a lot of positive praise for Michael Jordan even to this day. I mean, the Pistons beat them in the 88, 89, and 90 playoffs, two of those being in the Eastern Conference Finals. And there's this thought that, well, Michael was a whiner, and Michael, you know, cried about the officiating. And, you know, eventually we made a man out of him, and then he went on to be the successful player that he was. So it's very interesting to watch it through the lens of Pistons fans who had Michael's number, who were one of the few teams, when you look back at his career, that he had trouble with, that he couldn't get through.
Yeah, and then Dennis Rodman was a big part of that reason why, going up against him. Is Isaiah Thomas a beloved figure? Because nobody was villainized more than Isaiah Thomas in that.
Yeah, I mean, I think in Detroit he's a beloved figure. I think once you get outside of the Mitten State, you know, there's not a lot of love there for Isaiah. And Jordan felt the Pistons were trying to take cheap shots at him and try to injure him and play dirty, and Isaiah was the face of that. So you look back at it all these years, and that's the big reason why he wasn't on the Dream Team. We got a lot of play out of that from fans. You know, Isaiah was talented enough as a player to be on the Dream Team, but Isaiah's personality, Isaiah as an agitator, you get why he didn't make it. And what we've heard ringing loud and clear, if the trade-off was winning two world championships and defeating Michael Jordan, go be an agitator. Go be a pest. Go be a champion. The hell with the Dream Team.
Yeah. Yeah, for Detroit, it was the better thing to have happen when it was all said and done. Jim Costa in Detroit. Great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. Have a great Memorial Day weekend. Stay safe, my friend.
Hey, same to you guys.
Local talk plus national headlines from the people who are there. The 2-Minute Drill on the program with Seren Petro on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
You're in the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. The program proudly brought to you by our friends at Worth Harley-Davidson North, I-29, and Tiffany Springs. Worth Harley-Davidson North, everything you need to get on your bike or the bike itself, of course, new and pre-owned. Go to WorthHarleyDavidson.com. No payments till November. That's a pretty good deal going on right now at Worth Harley-Davidson North. We welcome Tom Fornelli to our Sprint guest line, CBS sports writer. He is with us right now. Tom, how are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Doing very good. Listen, I absolutely adore when you guys put out the coach rankings. We love ranking the coaches. We love that it pisses everybody off because it shows that they care. And I know you guys, I've listened to your podcasts and all the guys talking about it and everything that goes on and all the great reaction you get. And I just want to cover a couple of them. I really invite everybody to go. CBS Sports, you guys do great work there at CBS Sports. And this is one of my absolute favorites. And everyone can check it out right now as they've got 65 to 26, all the Power Fives. And then there's other rankings as well, other breakout rankings as well. But then 25 to number one is on another one. Let's start with our local guys first. Eli Drinkwitz, and I know it's a composite that you guys put together, but Eli Drinkwitz, were you on board with him at number 59? And I've heard you guys talk about it a million times, but for Missouri fans that might get their panties in a bunch because he's down towards the bottom, exactly why he's down towards the bottom, most of it obviously being he's a first-year guy. But what do you think of Drinkwitz?
Yeah, his ranking just boils down to he had the year at Appalachian State as a head coach, but, I mean, it was stepping into a program that kind of had a very solid foundation already built. He was only there for a year, so he maintained what they were doing, which is good because you always want to see that when a new coach comes in. But he wasn't – without the long sample size of him being there, it's really hard to get a great judgment on him. So going to Mizzou, you know, the jury's still kind of out. It's like, okay, well, now you're stepping into a program that isn't the best program in its conference, like Appalachian State has been in the Sun Belt. You're behind the eight ball. You've got to deal with Georgia. You've got to deal with Florida. Now you've got Tennessee coming up. Kentucky's been playing strong. And Mizzou, you know, while it was winning SEC titles a few years ago, it hasn't been that team the last couple of years. So it's not really – like putting him at 59th now isn't a statement of what we think Eli Drinkwitz is going to be or what he's going to be capable of doing at Missouri. It's just when compared to what everybody else on the list and what they've maybe accomplished already, it's hard to justify ranking him very highly.
Yeah, I totally get it. And I actually think 59 is kind of generous. Right? Like you could have easily said, here's a guy 1 year at Appalachian State as a head coach. And I love the way you guys wrote it up. And I'm not sure who wrote this one. The house was move-in ready on his 1 year at Appalachian State. Listen, I think the good news is that they had to give him a big check. And by all accounts, they won a bidding war against Arkansas to get him. And so I think that's great news for Mizzou. But I think it also shows a lot of confidence when you don't plop him down at 65 or 64, that you really do think something's there. I mean, I think that's a big deal. Last year, Chris Klieman was sitting at 56, but he had won national championship after national championship after a lower level to be just a few spots below where Klieman was last year on your guys' rankings. If I'm a Missouri fan, if you know how these things work, that should be taken as a compliment, shouldn't it?
Yeah, and part of that, too, is that while he's only had the 1 year as head coach, Drinkwitz is a name that you'd heard about the last few years as an offensive coordinator. Like we saw what he was able to do when he went to NC State, how he kind of helped turn that program around and helped started turning out 9-win seasons with the Wolfpack with his offense, which was, you know, very potent for them. So you've heard about him. It's just we haven't seen him as a head coach. So I think that what you get from his reputation as an offensive coordinator probably helped him in the minds of some when it came to putting these rankings together.
All right, next up on our local schools, Kansas at 43. Les Miles takes a 5-spot tumble. He was at 38. I know from listening to the podcast last year, and I haven't heard this year's podcast, so I apologize if you guys have already broken this down on there. I will get to it when Fatty takes a lot of walks this weekend. I remember the consternation you guys had and the diversity of where you were on Les Miles. Like, how much do we put him down there for being a national champion, and how much do we – kind of grade him down for the fact that he's carrying one of the biggest sacks of rocks uphill, theoretically, in college football by being the Kansas coach. He only drops 5 spots. I think that's fair. He didn't wow anyone. There was no, like, boy, that was impressive. It was really more of a mulligan year, like, okay, he didn't really move the needle, but it is Kansas. This is the year that he's either going to plummet and we're going to say he's done, or he's going to really jump a bunch of spots depending upon what he does in this season. Does that sound fair?
Yeah, and it is one of those situations that it's hard to really get a gauge on because, like you said, this is one of the few active coaches in college football right now who has won a national title. So you have to factor that in. But at the same time, that national title was, you know, 13 years ago, and it was at LSU, and we saw you can't help but kind of not just the way that his tenure ended at LSU, but – you see why his tenure at LSU ended in that there was a lot of stubbornness in what he was doing in that he kept thinking that I could just keep doing this and it's going to, you know, it's going to work. And it didn't. And they fired him. They replaced him with Ed Orgeron, who made the changes people had been telling Les Miles he'd had to make for, you know, 4 or 5 years. And we saw how that ended up for LSU. So you have to hold that against Miles, but at the same time, you're weighing it against, you know, the fact that he has won a national title. And I do think the fact that he's at Kansas now and the kind of uphill battle that job is, I think subconsciously there's a thing where you're like, okay, well, I could put him down a few spots lower simply because the odds are he's not going to really prove me wrong having such a tough gig. So it's not like you're worried that all of a sudden he's going to jump out with like an 11-2 season at Kansas in 2020 and make you look like an absolute moron. But it's possible it happens. And if he does, that's the thing. If Miles has success at Kansas and you say, okay, he won a national title at LSU and he's been able to turn Kansas into a team that's going to bowl games on a regular basis, he's going to be flying back into the top 20 and maybe the top 15 of our rankings soon enough.
Do you think that's going to happen?
No, and it's hard because we saw Mark Mangino do it, obviously, but there's so much that's stacked against Kansas. as far as like a recruiting base and not really having a set culture and idea behind an identity of what that football program is. And a lot of people have come in and tried to build one, but they haven't been successful in doing it. And maybe Miles' stubbornness towards the end of his tenure at LSU in a way works as a positive for him at Kansas, in that he's got his mindset on what we're going to do and what we can do. And he could have the strength of will to force that to happen and make it happen, and we see that improve it. But still, it's just based on the way it ended at LSU, where it seemed like he kind of got, you know, lost behind, and he didn't, like, the game kind of passed him up a little bit, and he seemed too stubborn to try to catch up and figure it out. Unless he overcomes that, then I think it's going to be very difficult for him to have that kind of success at Kansas. Or not that kind of, but, you know, just to make it a bowl team in the regular basis and competing in the Big 12 and not where it is now, where it's pretty much the doormat of the conference.
All right, recency bias is real, right? And when you're doing these rankings, I think that's the biggest thing you got to guard against. And Chris Klieman at K-State jumped 14 spots from 56 to 42. So, Cat fans, he's one spot in front of Les Miles. And remember, this is all teams, so don't get like, how can he not be 20 up from Les Miles? He had such a better year. Listen, these guys are good at what they do. Listen to the podcast. You'll understand how they're putting everything together here. But how much are you concerned that Chris Klieman's first year was? It is Bill Snyder's kids that he's playing with. He loses an entire offensive line. How when you were doing it, I know you can't speak for everybody who had the votes, but how difficult was it to gauge, like, wow, that was a really impressive year? Because he did exceed expectations. I think their over-under total was 5.5. Maybe, and he won 8 games, got into a bowl game. You know, he won games while being outstatted all the time. And I can't tell, I'm either going to look back 3 years from now and be like, that was the luckiest SOB ever, or I'm going to be like, this is one of those true, rare elite coaches that, you know, he games the game. He knows all the edges, and the yards he gets are the important yards. He knows where it is. Like, I think Andy Reid's got a lot of that. How difficult is it to balance just the 1 year of Klieman at the highest level and not overreact when he's going to lose so many players this year?
Yeah, it's a balancing act for sure. And it's a lot of it is still, at least as far as the way I looked at it, I take into account what he was able to do at North Dakota State, because it's, yes, he took over a situation where North Dakota State had already been winning FCS titles before he won, you know, under Craig Bull. But it's when you come in and you have success right away, when you step into that situation, there's something to be said for it. But the fact that he was able to maintain it for 5 seasons, I mean, his 5 seasons with the Bison go 69-6, says, okay, so this guy actually knows what he's doing. So then when he steps into Kansas State and he, like you said, he exceeds the expectations for what that team was supposed to be last year by a good 2.5 wins based on the Vegas win total. And they had that win over Oklahoma. It's like, all right, this guy, he has a recipe for his success. And I think that gives you a reason to be optimistic in what he can do and where he is as a coach. So that's what factors into my rankings. That said, like, they do have a lot to replace. So I think it's going to be interesting next year if they take a step back. What will the reaction be? Because like you said at the very top, recency bias is a very real thing, and I would expect he's going to drop. But I don't think, at least not in my mind, I think maybe with the other voters it could happen, but I'm a big Klieman fan. I loved the hire when it happened. I thought it was a great hire, especially for what Kansas State had been as a program, trying to replace the guy who built the program and turned it into what it is. I thought this was the perfect kind of hire for them to try to keep the momentum, where maybe it's not the same program or the same culture, but the same standard being set. I thought he was a perfect hire for that. So personally, if the Wildcats take a step back this year, I'm probably not going to knock them that much, because I kind of expect them to. But at the same time, if they're able to exceed expectations for a second straight year, that is a great sign for what he's going to be able to do in Manhattan.
I don't think there can be a whole lot of loud arguing. I mean, you can have a disagreement of opinion, but you're not going to scream and yell over Alabama, Nick Saban 1, Dabo Sweeney 2, Lincoln Riley number 3. I will come back to the top two here in a second, but Ed Orgeron has won a national championship, and he jumps all the way up to 4. 15 draft picks lost, including a 1-1 quarterback. You know, if although he was undefeated and they kicked everybody's ass, right? So that it wasn't just – this wasn't a two-loss national championship season, no offense, Les Miles, that Les Miles put together. This was a dominant performance. But do you feel a little bit nervous that so much is on this one year? Because there are a lot of people that thought last year was make or break for Ed Orgeron.
Yeah, I do wonder what it's going to look like at this time next year. Because I think that if you look at what Orgeron has done, and I talked about it when we were discussing Miles, the fact that he was willing to make the changes that were clearly had to be made to build his, you know, to build his program and his offense around the talent that he had and the talent that is now available to him to get the results that he did by, you know, getting a better scheme and fitting it with elite talent and, oh my God, watch what happens. I do think that in 2020, with all those players that they're losing, to think that LSU in the SEC West, where it's got to compete with Alabama, where it's got to compete with Auburn, and you've got Texas A&M with Jimbo Fisher entering his third year, and you start to look at that team and think maybe they're going to be a little bit better and more of a handful to deal with. LSU's going to take a step back in 2020. I think that you'd be kidding yourself if you think that they're really going to go undefeated again or get to the playoff. It's going to be really difficult for them to do. But I do think that the way he's recruited and the kind of culture he's brought back to that program, LSU was not like a one-hit wonder in that we're not going to see it. I think that starting in 2021 again, once they've got more experience and a more older roster, this is once again going to be a team that's competing for an SEC title on an annual basis. And by extension, if you're winning SEC titles, you're competing for them. You're competing for playoff spots. So I don't know if Ed's still going to be at number four on this list next year, but I don't think he's going to be falling out of the top 10 anytime soon either.
Yeah, gone from number 30 to number four in the 1 year. And I don't have a major bone with it. It's just like, wow, that, you know, what are you going to do?
That's just how good that team was last year.
Yeah, exactly. All right, and then lastly, what does Dabo Swinney have to do to get in front of Alabama? Not only did he win a title, not only does he beat Nick Saban, but then he backs up the title from 2 years ago, which was backing up his title from before that, by getting all the way back to the championship game and really for two and a half, three quarters going toe-to-toe with this great LSU team. I mean, to me, I would have put Dabo Swinney at number one. Why is he at number two?
I think it's just the five overall for the six overall titles for Saban and just the legacy and the length of time he's done it. But we discussed it on the pod and we were all 100% in agreement that if, you know, this year or next year, if Clemson goes out and wins another national title before Alabama does, he's going to be jumping to number one on everybody's ballot simply because then it will be, you know, three titles probably coming all beating Alabama in each time. So I think that, you know, Clemson enters this season and they've got Trevor Lawrence and you look at him and you look at the rest of the ACC and you're practically already penciling them into the college football playoff because it's like, okay, well, nobody in the ACC is capable of beating this team, so we might as well just put them there now. So I think that speaks to the quality of the program that he's built, and it is a lot closer of a vote, whereas in previous years, it's always been since we started doing this, you know, Nick Saban was at number one. There was really no thinking much past that when you started putting your rankings together. But this year, I will say that I spent a lot more time debating with myself, Saban or Swinney, because I think that his case is much stronger now than it has been in recent years, especially with Alabama actually missing the playoff last year and Clemson kind of coming close to yet another national title, at least reaching the final once again. So I do think if they win another national title before Alabama does, I think Swinney's going to be on top of – I know he's going to be on top of mine, and I think he's going to be on top of everybody else's too.
We're talking to CBS's Tom Fornelli here in the program. Time for our final four quickies, Tom, and I will start you with this. I was told you're a White Sox fan. Is that correct?
Correct.
All right. Is Jerry Reinsdorf a good owner, yes or no?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I mean, he's not perfect, but it's hard to argue with the results.
Okay.
And I will also say that in this city right now, we've had in the last few days the reports that, you know, the Cubs, the team that have made like $500 million in revenue last year, are cutting the salaries of all their employees. Meanwhile, the White Sox have not furloughed or fired any of their full-time employees or cut their salaries. So when you want to look at it from what's a good owner from that perspective, I think that one stands out pretty clear.
Yeah, I think it does too. That's a great point. That's great to hear. All right, next up, what do you grill best? We got a Memorial Day weekend. What are you best at on the grill?
Chicken, barbecue chicken. That's the bread and butter.
Yeah, I like that. Okay. Chickens can be tough, man. That can be a tough one. You know, there's nothing but I get a little nervous when my wife hands me those. You know, nowadays, all these chicken breasts are like giant. I'm like, oh, God, that's a tough one to not. You know, keep juicy on the inside.
Gotta,
or, yeah. not try out. It's a tough one.
Yeah. Challenge you got to conquer. That's all.
Okay. Okay. Good to know. All right. Do we get a 12-game season in college football? 12 full 12-game regular season? Yes or no?
Yes. Okay. A tepid yes, but yes.
Hey, I'll take it. I'll take a tepid yes. I'm good with that. And finally, if college football were to have a last dance, the Last Dance documentary we all, most of us at least, enjoyed on ESPN, what would be the subject matter for a 10-part documentary on college football? Who is it?
I would love to see one on the 2008 Florida team that won a national title. It was Urban Meyer coaching. It was his second national title. But more than that, just some names of players on that roster. You know, you've got Tim Tebow at quarterback. The backup quarterback was a guy named Cam Newton, who would eventually transfer to Auburn and go win a national title of his own. You got receivers Percy Harvin, who went on to be one of the more exciting players. You got the Pouncey twins on your offensive line. You've got a ton of great players on defense. You had Riley Cooper, who went on to be a little bit infamous, according, you know, based on what happened at a concert once he was in the NFL. Oh, and at tight end, you had some guy named Aaron Hernandez. So I feel like a documentary on that team could lead to some really enlightening, interesting episodes.
That is awesome. That is a great answer. Tom Fornelli from CBS. You guys do great work there. I love your podcast. I love all the work you guys do on college football. It's great stuff. So congrats on all that great work. And I appreciate the time. Have a great weekend, and hopefully we'll talk to you again down the road.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on. Have a good weekend.
You do the same. Tom Fornelli with us here in the program. We will take a break, come back, and react to a couple things he had to say. Need to know, Adam Teicher coming up at the 5 o'clock hour. You're listening to the program.
The program with Soren Petro.
Yeah, you don't like getting licked. You like licking other guys, and it came out weird.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt end of the hour answer. Two Royals pitchers have won 18 games and thrown a no-hitter in the same season. I gave up the Steve Busby was one. Who was the other?
Brett Saberhagen.
Brett Saberhagen only won 13 games the year he threw his no-hitter. That would be the other
Jim
guy.
Jim Colbert,
1978. Kind of gets lost in Royals history, but 18-14 that year, 3.29 ERA, and the first Royals no-no at the K.
Kaufman, yeah, because Steve Busby's were both on the road.
Yep. Milwaukee
That's
and
right.
Detroit, I think.
Yeah. It's only been, 30 years since the Royals have had a no-hitter?
Exactly.
The 91, almost 30 years. Since Brett Saberhagen threw a no-hitter. Yeah.
They've only been no-hit twice. I mean, that, as long as they've been around, just six no-hitters, four for them and two against them.
Yeah. Nolan Ryan and John Lester?
Yep.
Is that right? Yeah. By the way, Joe's Kansas City Barbecue, of course, they're ready for you all weekend long. You can order online now at joeskc.com. But if you're staying at home and you want to do some grilling, Kansas City Barbecue Store, go to thekansascitybbqstore.com. Grills, smokers, sauces, rubs, utensils, even the meat itself, the fuel, everything you need to be grilling out this weekend. It's at the Kansas City Barbecue Store. Find them online at thekansascitybbqstore.com. See them in person at 119th and Strang Line Road. It is the best. It's where I got my grill, my utensils. It's the Kansas City Barbecue Store, 119th and Strang Line. Did I say row? 119th and Strang Line is where they're at. We'll take a break. Need to Know and Adam Teicher next hour.
It's the Jazz End of the Hour Question on the Half Show. Sponsored by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.
Laissez le bon temps rouler.
All right, he's the only man to play 17 NFL seasons and start every game. Who is he? Brought to you by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.